Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I have such an inappropriate show to do today. Inappropriate because we're going to look into fasting, the science of fasting, and it's a week too soon, but I got so excited about it, I just couldn't put it off another week. So, yes, for the next week, do what you're going to do for the holidays, but remember this show. I'm going to plant the seed today because there's something in science, and of course, that's the theme of the show. I want to take all those wonderful health practices that are written off all too often as nonsensical, non-founded, non-scientific, and absolute bunko that have been supported, pioneered, fostered, fathered by many people over the last 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000 years. And yet today, who really fasts? When was the last time you did a fast? When was the last time you risked a 1 week, 7 day water fast, nothing but pure water? That's almost an atrocity in our mind today. Some of us will go for the traditional juice fast a day or two, but to do a 14 day water fast, a 21 day water fast, long ago, not when time began, I'm talking only the turn of the last century, medical doctors owned what they called, unfortunately, sanitariums. They weren't sanitariums. It's the old-fashioned colloquialism for health spa. The turn of the last century, medical doctors, Tilden, Kellogg, so on and so forth, owned health spas, and they cured diseases. And they were allowed to say they cured diseases, and these sanitariums did nothing more than fast people. That tradition's been carried down today to present day. And outside of the religious context, we have people like Sheldon Jensen, the infamous Arnold Ehrhart, rational fasting. Your health food stores are still stocked with these books, most of them touting the juice fast. And yes, in times of drought, meaning, well, maybe unemployment. We've all known what it's like to go a little bit light on the food, maybe a little lighter. Maybe in times of extreme stress, we just skip a meal, and then that meal gets skipped the second time, and before you know it, you went through that whole day without food. Think about that. All of us know that day, nothing happened. It wasn't dangerous. But we also know that other experience, where we skip breakfast and we get a headache, where we skip breakfast or lunch or dinner and we get so hypoglycemic that we almost pass out. And if you're on lots of medications, if you're on 2 to 3 to 4 to 6 to 10 to 15 meds, and you're barely alive, well, fasting can be extremely dangerous. So all the things you hear about it, from it's dangerous, perhaps you could even die, it's uncomfortable, it's unnecessary, it's starvation. Well, there's specks of truth in all of those things. On the other side of the fence are other foundations, are other concepts that science could support completely if you got that science. Today we're going to look at the science of fasting. Now, I posted 3 articles on the website. I hope you're on the website, straighttalk.cc. Some of you still listen on just the pure radio. Well, so be it then. But if you can, get to the computer. Just get in there, straighttalk.cc. Of course, if you're in the car listening, I'll do the best I can to describe the show. Remember, there are archives. Get on the website, purchase the archives. Hear the show again. Get to the literature section. Click on today's postings. I have 3 articles. I put those articles out there in full. You'll see me do this all the time on the show. I love that. There are so many periodicals written by medical doctors and scientists attesting to so many of these holistic practices. There is hard science behind of it. And as the technologies get better, I promise you we're going to see validation of so many over the last few thousand years of these traditional holistic practices validated by hard science. Here's an example. On the website, we have three postings. Fasting and neuronal autophagy. Autophagy and its cellular mechanisms, and autophagy in aging. What is autophagy? Well, you got to look at the cell. So let's look at a little bit of cell biology to make it easy. I put on pictures number, 9 and 10. Crop up either one. Take a look at those pictures. They'll blow up nicely for you. I'm on picture number 9 right now myself. Now take a look at that. That's the cell. If you're driving, the cell is a grape. It's got a skin, the membrane. It's got all that gooey stuff in the center. That's the cytoplasm or the cytosol or the protoplasm in the old-fashioned days. The guts of the cell. Then the seed of the cell is the nucleus, and the nucleus are the chromosomes. On the chromosomes are the genes. In the genes is the double-stranded helical DNA. The DNA is made of nucleotides. Those nucleotides are made of adenine, thymine, guanine, adenine, so on and so forth. The nucleotides. That's the setup in the cell. That cell that you're looking at, picture number 9, is a factory. It takes in oxygen, it takes in glucose, and it pumps out adenosine triphosphate, ATP. That high-powered triple phosphate molecule is the currency of the cell. That's the power of the cell. That's like having money in a foreign country. You don't need to speak the language. You don't need anything. All you need to do is produce the cash. That cash is the adenosine triphosphate. That cellular currency, if it's produced enough, the cell does two things. It, number one, it performs its function, and it repairs itself, number two. And in that balance of trade, function and repair, the cell lives on and on and on and on. When the balance goes out, when the raw materials aren't provided, when the cell breaks down, well, then you have problems. The first problem is inflammation. The second problem is free radical damage, or tandem to that inflammation. They're one and the same, really. After that, we don't get as much cellular production of adenosine triphosphate. And as always, life being what life is, we continue to stress the cell. So it's your brain cell, it's your heart cell, it's your kidney cell, it's your liver cell, so on and so forth. It's the cells of the glandular system. We continue relentlessly to stress these cells. How many of you have had a stressful holiday? People go a little cuckoo over the holidays. For as much as people enjoy the holidays, if you watch people, they get very nervous around the holidays. Not everybody sits at the Christmas table in a comfortable way. Old memories come up. Old conflicts arise. Lots of people get stressed because they get reminded that childhood, all the way to adulthood, just wasn't quite the way it was supposed to be. And as much as you want to bury the hatchet, you can't. I just tell you that as a doctor, as an observer. As the stress goes up, the breakdown of the cell increases. If you go into that cell there, picture number 9, and you look at the purple membrane and all those things in it, the ribosomes, the endoplasmic reticulum, the flagellum, the mitochondria, the lysosomes, the centrioles, the DNA, the RNA, the nuclear membrane, the Golgi apparatus, all these neat little depots, these little booths, these little farmers markets in the cells. They're called organelles. Those organelles have functions. Those organelles need to be repaired. If those organelles are not repaired, the cell starts losing out. It can't kill a virus. It can't kill a bacteria. It can't swallow up and get rid of a heavy metal. It can't produce its ATP. It can't repair itself. It can't function. That cell starts to look all too shabby. Join me and travel inside your body to your organ of choice, take a look at the cluster of cells. We're not even going to talk about the space between the cells. That space, of course, you know well, that's the extracellular fluid, the space in between the cells. Just remember, that's got to be clean and dandy, spick and span, or that cell starts to die in its own filth. But let's forget that now. Let's stick to inside the cell. Those organelles, all of them, have functions. We don't need to get into those functions today, but rest assured, if you and I went down and shrunk ourselves inside that cell, angstrom units we were measured in then, if we went down there and looked at all those little organelles, we'd walk into each one and do quality control. Quality control inside the cell. We'd look at each of those organelles and say, well, this organelle, this factory is not quite up to snuff. It needs to have this replaced and that replaced and the other thing replaced. And this thing, maybe we should replace it because it looks like it's going to break down pretty soon. And then we'd go into other organelles and we'd say, this is a mess. This needs to be shut down. We can see in the totality of production that this organelle is not making its proper contribution. Here's the point. Here's the dynamic point. That cell has been placed with a divine intelligence that allows itself to scan itself. Now, how it does this, only God knows. Science is a joke when it purports to understand how the cell knows when the cell is sick. But the cell does. We observe that as biologists. We watch the cell selectively, with hierarchy, prioritize what needs to die. The cell will kill itself. It will digest itself. It will scan itself. It will look at what within itself should not be there, what's breaking down. And if it's broken down beyond repair, the cell will eat itself. Autophagy. Cannibalism. The cell will cannibalize any part of itself. Boy, as a totality, don't we wish we could do that? Metaphorically, we can. In a sense, literally, we can. But not like I'm going to describe. Like, if you didn't like your skin, you could digest your skin. Like, if you didn't like the way the cartilage under your kneecap looked, you could take off your kneecap, mash it up, get rid of it, and grow a new one. The cell actually does that. It eats pieces of itself and then puts them back together. But what do you think that means quantitatively in terms of the totality then? It means that if we take an organ, let's say the liver, love that liver because it's what? Self-generating. Those cells look at themselves, and if they don't like the way they look, and again, who knows what mechanisms behind that. But if the liver doesn't like the way the liver looks, the liver starts eating itself. Only when the liver eats itself can the liver repair itself. Now that's a fundamental you have to take to the bank. That is a critical fundamental. Only when the liver eats itself can it repair itself. I want you to sit on that concept. You really got to take that one in. So I'll say it again. Only when the liver eats itself can it repair itself. The process through which a cell in the body, in this case, just for argument's sake, a liver cell, doesn't like the way it looks, it begins to secrete enzymes in one of its structures called a lysosome. So you can stay there, that picture number, what was it, 8 or 9? Either one. Picture number 9. Look up at the top of that picture. Excuse me, the side of that picture. Bottom side, bottom left. And look at the word lysosome. Lysosome. It's this little vesicle, this little round thing. It's colored yellow in that picture on number 9. That lysosome runs around the cell, and when it sees something it doesn't like, it eats it. Now, how it knows what to eat, we don't need to get into that. And in the end, we won't know why. God knows why. Again, theme of the show. That intersection between cellular intelligence and the end of scientific grasp. Where science fails to grasp things, you have to hit it over the head with a large hammer to admit reality. Scientists have to measure it and see it and be hit over the head with it before they say it's observed. But in this case, it's so obvious that the lysosome will go after the defective part of the organelle and digest it with its enzymes that even science accepts it. That gives me a green light. That gives Medici Enterprises a forum. Because riddled throughout science, as we observe the cell, as we observe human function, are moments where the cell shows very high intelligence. Now, we hate to say that this intelligence is spiritual. Spirituality has no place. And blah, blah, blah. It's an old theme and I don't want to get into it. But I'm never going to stop repeating it to you, you see, because when you're sick, when you have disease, when you have symptoms, when you don't feel well, have you ever fasted? Shelton, Earitt, Jensen. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. And of course, you're going to be buried. You're going to be marinated with fear. Fear of terrorism. Fear of not having your life insurance, not having your auto insurance, not having your this insurance, not having that. Fear, 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 and fear. Fear about what will happen if you don't take your supplements. Fear what will happen if you don't take your pharmaceuticals. And likewise, fear of what would happen if you don't, or if you do engage in a fast. But if you read the literature, fasting, driven by some unknown mechanism, stimulates autophagy. Fasting stimulates the process through which the cell cleans itself. That's fascinating. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Because that's fascinating. If you kick back in the circus of life and just consider that whatever symptom you have, however destroyed, biologically speaking, your cell is, if you're 50 years old and you look 70, if you're 30 and you look 70, if through the indiscretions of life you have symptoms, if through abuse to your body you have diseases, those cells have a way to in and accelerate their own repair. And it's called abstinence from food. Look at the articles. Article number one, number two, and number three. Take a look at picture number six. Short-term fasting induces profound neuronal autophagy. Just take a look at this. You should be able to read that clearly on the website. You can't blow it up. But once you click the article, it's an easy read. I'll just read to you a little bit. Just a little bit of the first page there. That's picture number six. Autophagy is a key homeostatic process in which the cytosolic components are degraded and recycled through the lysosomes. As I said, there it is. This is a major from magazine here. This is a major periodical, the Department of Immunology and Microbial Science at Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla. These are not nutritionists. These are not chiropractors. These are not naturopaths. These are not acupuncturists. These are not your local homemade nutritionists. These are not people who studied in a weekend seminar and claimed to know something. These are full-fledged scientists, medical doctors, and mostly scientists. And look at what they're saying. Upregulation of this pathway may be neuroprotective. They're a little scared, aren't they? And much effort is being invested in developing drugs that cross the blood-brain barrier and increase neuronal autophagy. I always love their solutions. They're jackass solutions. They want to increase neuronal autophagy. It means if your brain is decaying, those neurons, formally speaking, were not thought to accelerate repair if they're starved. In other words, to starve something is to increase the process through which the lysosome degrades the cells, degrades the parts and components of the cell that don't work, so that the cell can increase its repair rate. This article basically says they didn't think that occurs in the brain. They thought it and knew it occurred in the liver, in other organs, but they didn't think it occurred in the brain. Now they found even the brain, yes, oddly enough, even the brain. And their solution? To invent drugs to increase this uptake. These guys never get it right, do they? But along the way, they basically prove holistic medicine. All these proofs for all these crazy things. Ultimately, science. The same science that's trying to understand mechanisms to create synthetic drugs. That same science will prove all of these holistic remedies. Here's a classic example. You read the article. The article's going to go on to say what I just said. That if you deny the cell food, glucose, fatty acids, proteins, it's going to, through the lysosome, search out which organelles need to be replaced. It's going to selectively attack itself. It's not going to harm itself. It's going to selectively go after itself. If you look at picture number 8, that's the first page to another article. Autophagy and Aging, the Department of Development and Molecular Biology. Marion Bassin, Liver Research Center and Institute for Aging Studies, the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Not too credentialed, huh? How much higher do you need to go? Go ahead. Tell your doctor to get rid of your symptom, your arthritis. You're going to go on a 24-day supervised water fast. Go ahead. Tell your rheumatologist. Tell your psychiatrist. Tell your gastroenterologist. Tell the guy managing your diabetes. Tell the guy managing your IBS. Tell him that based on these manuscripts, you think that there's something to fasting. And when they tell you that this is absolute bunko, just come in with about 50 of these articles from different medical schools all over the United States, all over the world, written by people who are more credentialed and more educated than your doctor will ever be. And drop that on their desk and politely say, "Doc, I hear your point and I love that you care for my health, but would you take a look at these articles? Because how could your own people be writing so much of this so prolifically?" "Yes, but you need to understand this hasn't been sent to clinical studies with thousands and thousands of patients to confirm the validity of what these articles are simply speculating. That this article, Mr. Smith, Autophagy and Aging, keeping that old broom working, is merely conjecture. You have to understand that there's a difference between the science and literature and actually helping people. If you believe that, I have a bridge for you to buy. Don't spend your money on vacations. Give it to me. I have a bridge to sell you. And along that, drink the Kool-Aid too. Ask your medical doctor if something like fasting isn't a worthwhile inquiry, scientifically based upon all the literature. And then, of course, there's all these crazy people. All these nutritionists and chiropractors and acupuncturists and naturopaths. There's Herbert Shelton. Take a picture of Herbert Shelton. If you really want to read about one of the masters of fasting, Herbert Shelton, he was an osteopath. Started the American Natural Hygiene Society. Fasting for renewal of life. This guy would rent out home. He'd have property. And each of those properties throughout the world would have a big house on it, and people would come. Maybe the house had 9 or 10 bedrooms, and he would supervise fasts. This is way back when. This is 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. And lots of medical doctors did this. They'd get property, get a huge house with a bunch of bedrooms, and you'd pay some monthly sort of a fee to go through the fast, the water fast. Wasn't even the juice fast. It was the water fast for renewal of life. And they already understood the science. This information's been in the science for a long time. If you read these books, these gentlemen are referring to understandings of the lysosome and auto-ingestion and the rest of it as far back as the 60s, 70s, 80s. Didn't necessarily take an electron microscope. So if you add the clinical evidence, the books, the literature, if you add your common sense, and then if you add the hard science, well, what are you left with? I'd say, unanimously speaking, you're left with, well, what are you doing for the new year? Autophagy and aging. That's what aging is. Hormonal supplementation? Human growth hormone? Estrogen therapy? Herbs? Against what? Something more fundamental. And that's the point of the show. And if you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health, straighttalk.cc. Please get to the website. And the phone number, if you need the phone number, 714-850-1007. If you can't figure your way out of this health puzzle, call that, make an appointment, we'll give you a hand. If not, get on the archives. Get the archives, listen to the shows. Put it all together. Start thinking. I have a paradigm to give to you. It's based on principles. And if you really take the 140 shows into yourself, you'll create a force field around yourself of education so that you can sustain yourself through your healing. Healing is principles. Healing is not worrying about your symptom. Healing is not investing money and then looking at your bank account each week and saying, gee, I put this much in and I'm still sick. Healing is not what you think it is. Healing is a pot. It's a big pot. It's called the health pot. It's what you put under the Christmas tree. And you keep it there all year long. And every single week you put something more into the health pot. Each show I give you is another gift into your health pot. And you just keep adding up those gifts. I did coffee enemas. I did colon cleanses. I changed my diet. I got flexible. I got a sense of what it is to move chi, to open a meridian. I started investigating the art of fasting. And every single one of those little pearls on all of these shows, we put the science. If at all possible, the hard science. And that sustains you. Now that's a concept. Do you get that concept? Do you understand that you, your friends, your relatives, people who think that holistic medicine is falling short of that, it's shy of that, it's simply what herb do I take for what symptom? You're going to spin in circles. Worse yet, if you're doing surgeries and pharmaceutical drugs against these practices of health, you're never going to get there. So take this concept into yourself. How would you approach a fast? That's the question. Well, now armed with the science, you might investigate your first step. So you're you, and the funds are limited. And you have to eat food. And you already know that when you have to eat the food, you eat the farmer's market food. Eat the best food that you can find. We don't need to get into that. You guys are way too educated for that discussion. But if you're starting out, the first thing I want you to do is get an Accia check. We're going to take you from you're overweight, you're sick, you're tired, you're symptomatic, you have a disease. We're going to take you from that compromised state all the way to the point where you can get your body healthy enough to start to skip a meal or two or three. And then under the care of a supervised and licensed practitioner, you can undergo a fast, a supervised fast. Go to your medical doctor. Go to your holistic medical doctor. Do whatever your common sense dictates. But understand that at some point, no matter who you are, you can jump into the pool of health. For pennies on the dollar. For pennies. First step. So I'm going to talk to you, and you're 30, 40 pounds overweight. Or you're underweight, and you're looking to gain weight. That's right. Remind me to bring that out later. People who can never gain weight after fasts, they've been shown to normalize their weight. Read Shelton, Herbert Shelton, Fasting for Renewal of Life. This is a guy that did nothing but fast people. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fasts over 50, 60, 70 years. Can you imagine that? Where are those guys today? Not too many of them are around. Holistic medicine has drowned itself in supplement theories and lots of rationalizations to support supplementation. One of the most recent rationalizations regarding fasting is you can't do a juice fast. You can't do a water fast. You've got to do a juice fast. Water fasts are dangerous. That juice is easier. That juice makes more sense. Well, you know, everybody's got a bit of it. Everybody's got a bit of truth. Tricky part is when the truth kind of extends itself to rationalism, meaning you're rationalizing an ulterior motive in the name of extending a basic truth. Shelton didn't do that. He was a water faster. Take note. But you're not ready for a water fast because, as I said, you can barely stand up. Or you can. You can make it to work. You roll out of bed, you get to the car. You go to the car, you get to the office. You finish the office, you get back to the car, you roll back home, you sit on your couch, you have dinner, and you just repeat this in a cycle. A few chores on Saturday, Sunday you rest, Monday you're back into the routine. Lots of people live like this. They live in pain. It hurts to even move. If that's you, or if you're looking for radiant health, start this way. Get yourself an AccuCheck. An AccuCheck is going to measure blood sugar. Real low-cost little item. All our type 2 diabetics, what is that? Half the planet now is diabetic? All our type 2 diabetics know what that is, an AccuCheck. Go into a drugstore, buy it, learn to use it. And 1 hour after all of your meals, measure your blood sugar. Make sure that blood sugar is below 100, no matter what you eat. And just keep changing your diet. Check my other shows until you get that blood sugar below 100. The first thing you have to do to become proficient at fasting, you've got to learn to regulate your blood sugar. You want to be able to, in any given moment, in any given day in your life, no matter how much work you have to do, get up and not eat. Skip the meal and skip the second meal and just feel fine. No low blood sugar, no ill temper, no foggy headedness, no fatigue, nothing. You got to get there before you fast. Now, if you don't listen to that, instead you just decide to take an overweight body filled with high blood sugar carbs, not even the good carbs, and you simply dive into a water fast, you're going to hurt yourself. Or you could. So don't do that. Use common sense. Go slow. Here's common sense. Get an AccuCheck. Learn to vary your diet. If that's confusing, get the archives and listen to the other shows. And bring your blood sugar down all day long under 100, no matter what you eat. So unless you're already full-fledged diabetic, when you get up in the morning, your blood sugar is about 80, 90. Then you eat your breakfast or your lunch or your dinner. Or whenever you eat, measure it 1 hour later. It's got to stay under 100. If it's not, change your diet until it is. Once you pass that test, you know what you've done? You've satisfied law number two, which is wait for the enzymes to be made in the liver to allow for gluconeogenesis. Big words for, if you don't eat, your body regulates blood sugar by burning fat. And that's a matter of enzymes that the liver produces. And those enzymes, if you're eating a lot of carbs, those enzymes are not there. They're very slow to activate. So if you fuel your blood sugar, if you sustain your blood sugar with too much carb, the minute you go off the carb, the enzymes aren't there in the liver to take the fat and produce what? Sugar. You can produce sugar, glucose, from your essential fatty, from fats. You can produce glucose from protein. Your liver can do lots of things for you. And I don't want to get into it now, and I don't want to get into the carb thing now. I simply want to point out that once you've got the DNA testing behind you, once you know, as Jared Diamond writes in The Human Ape, Chapter 8, Agriculture's Mixed Blessings, once you know that early man, pre-agrarian man, was mostly maintaining blood sugar by burning fat, for the most part, and doing quite well, living in a low-grade ketosis. Once you know that for a fact, and we do, you can pretty much make the claim that once you, say, get your carbs down to 20%, wait for those enzymes in the liver to birth themselves to allow you to keep that blood sugar under 100 all day long, you're going to feel pretty good. And if you try that, you're going to find out that is the case. But just in the interest of fasting, please take a jump to this next level. Then take the plunge. Try skipping one meal a day. Just one meal. Very simple. Eat a nice breakfast. Eat a wonderful lunch. Come dinner, when you start getting hungry, when your blood sugar starts to drop, 6, 7 o'clock, guess what? You're already home. You're already on the couch. You're already approaching bedtime. You're already comfortable. You're already in the safety and security of your home. You're already with loved ones. You're all hopefully in a perfect place to sustain a little stress to your symptomatic or sickly or disease-ridden body. It's the perfect first test. Skip dinner. You're going to get hungry. Maybe you're going to get low blood sugar. You know low blood sugar. Your mood changes. The EBGBs come up. Your nightmares haunt you. Your emotions, they start coming up. You feel angry. You get tense. Well, maybe if you can stand up, you take a drive. Maybe you watch a movie. Maybe you just preoccupy yourself. You're with loved ones, hopefully. And if you're alone, find whatever you love to do and do it. Get through that evening without eating food. Sip of water. Because your blood sugar is going to drop and you're going to get tired. And then you're going to go to sleep. And hopefully you're going to sleep deep and well, because you're not clogging up your gut at night like you usually do. Now do that. Do that. Get the AccuCheck. Learn what it is to keep your blood sugar low at all times. Wait for those enzymes in the liver to be made. You'll know it because you can go through your day on minimal carbs. If your carbs are down to 20%, your enzymes are there in the liver. You're living on an empty stomach. Your life is not about stuffing your face, bloating your belly, feeling all that food, indigested food, undigested food, stuff your gut, and the pressure in the inside of the stomach tells you you're full. Eat till you burst or you're not full. No, eat just enough to have energy and love that empty feeling in your stomach. Love how it makes your brain clean. Go there and then skip dinner after you've mastered that. After just about 7 nights a week, you can skip dinner. Dinner just disappeared. So did the bills for food. Now you can spend that extra money on good food. Then do this. Alter, so this is step number 4. Alter your breakfast. Have your favorite breakfast, but make it low carbs. A low carb breakfast. And eat. Don't worry about it. Don't make it confusing. If it's bacon and eggs, if it's steak and eggs, I don't care. If it's oatmeal and your blood sugar doesn't go up, great. If you like oatmeal, 1 hour after you eat, your blood sugar is 80, so be it. A light breakfast, a low-carb breakfast, and then eat a hearty lunch. Have a substantial lunch. I don't care what it is. Just make it healthy. but skip dinner. So now you're skipping dinner, and you're altering your breakfast and your lunch. Dynamite. Next step, the plunge. The big plunge. You ready? By February, you'll be doing this. Eat only lunch. Only lunch. So now you're only eating once a day. You got rid of dinner. You altered breakfast and lunch. Now you got rid of breakfast. Now you get up, and like you often do, you don't eat. Then you get to lunch. Have a feast. Eat well. Satiate yourself. Don't put yourself to sleep. Don't spike your blood sugar. Simply get your blood sugar to about 80, 90, 100. Have satiety. If you have to add a breakfast in, if you have to add something else in to that eat once a day routine, add 32 to 40 ounces of celery juice mixed with 20% apple or grape, as long as your blood sugar doesn't spike. That's right. Good old organic crispy green celery juice. And add a little bit of fruit juice in there, as long as your blood sugar doesn't go up. But it won't. 20% apple or grape juice on 32 to 40 ounces of spring water mixed in. If you do that, you're going to find that it takes the edge off. So if you're challenged at that one meal a day, spruce out throughout the day 32 to 40 ounces of, well, if you can do this, it's even better. Take about 12 ounces of juice, 80% celery, say 20% apple, fresh squeezed, of course. Don't make it complicated. Take about 12 ounces of that. Mix the rest of it with water. Bring that to 32 to 40 ounces. So you're sort of making a dilution. If that's not too much for you to do. If it is, well, guess what? Do a 50% dilution. So take about 16 ounces of pure juice and 16 ounces to 24 ounces of water and mix it together. And drink that throughout the day on top of that one meal. Now, if you have to do that, do it. If you don't, don't. That's right. Simply have that one meal. So get up, don't eat anything. By then, hopefully by then, and if you wait and you're patient and you work at it, all of you by then, almost all of you by then, definitely you, yes, you. After a while, definitely you will be able to do one meal a day without any juice. That's dynamite. Now you're living on one meal a day. And of course, every nutritionist, every dietitian, every RDA, every agency, every institution, everything, everywhere, and everybody is going to tell you that's insane. Don't do that too long. If you do that more than a day, you'll hurt yourself. You'll die. Something terrible will happen. Your legs will fall off. That's lame. That's really lame. It's El Dumbo. Don't listen to that. At the same time, go slowly. So once you can eat one meal a day, maybe one day a week, try it 2 days a week, then try it 3 days a week. You'd be amazed at what you thought you were that you really are. Now let's use a little common sense. So let's take all the scientific literature now and all the caution, nutritional terrorists that are sitting there to inform you that this is insane. And let's just use something better than or bigger than any tool you have. Let's use our common sense. If as you do this, you start feeling better, that's a clue. Take that clue to the bank. If as you start eating only one meal a day and having some juice, you have energy all day, you have less joint pain, you just feel better. You think better. Your mood is better. You talk more coherently. You feel more love. If everything's working better, why worry? That's called common sense. don't ever divorce yourself from your common sense. Now, let's say you make that 2 days a week, 3 days a week. If 7 days a week you're only eating one meal a day and having some water to go with it when you're thirsty and you're feeling better than you've ever felt, keep going. Now I'll be really conservative and I'll say, under medical supervision, because you guys, you can't do anything unless you're under medical supervision because you don't know better. You're the public. You might hurt yourself. So you have to respect that. At this point, under medical supervision, if you're capable of eating one meal a day and starting out obese and with high blood sugar, you've trained yourself over 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months to where you can just live on one meal a day feeling better than ever. Go to your medical doctor or some licensed practitioner and say, I'd like you to supervise me in a water fast. Let them figure it out. And if they can't, go find someone that can. And keep looking until someone does. You'll find somebody. Just Google it up. You know that Google thing. Do that and get supervised through a water fast. Where day in and day out, you live on water. You wake up, you have some water. At lunch, you have some water. Maybe 5 or 6 times a day, you have some water. And guess what? Amazing. Amazed you will be that on as little as 30 ounces of water a day, even less, you still feel great. And often, you don't even feel thirsty. That's the reality for a lot of people doing water fasts. Now, of course, you have to use your common sense, right? This is a common sense show. This says, number one, above all, holistic medicine obliges you to use your common sense. We really shouldn't call it holistic medicine. What we should call it is a simple observation of nature. When animals are sick, they fast. Animals have lots of little tricks along the way. If they're sick, meaning if they're infected, meaning if they have a disease, meaning if they have a tumor, meaning if there's just some reason they're depressed. Whatever an animal deals with, an animal stops eating. And guess what? An animal stops drinking. Animals understand how to enhance autophagy. Animals understand that to repair themselves, so this is back to the science, you have to go into catabolism, which is cell breakdown, so that you can go into cell repair. So if you've got infections, biofilms hiding away, let the body waste itself so the biofilm is hard up for what it needs. Starve your biofilm. Let your body's natural healing mechanisms go after the biofilm because they're not so busy going after everything else because you've relieved your body of the burden. But I said I wouldn't get into science so much. I was talking about animals. And animals just ask you to observe them. Is nature so foolish that we shouldn't take a cue from animals? Well, then why aren't we being told when we have cancer and autoimmune disease and arthritis to fast? Why isn't your doctor at Kaiser supervising your medical fast? Why with your diabetes? Why with your arthritis? Why with your psoriatic arthritis? Why with your cancers? Why with your heart disease? Why with your precipitating plaque formations? Aren't your cardiologists and your rheumatologists and your gastroenterologists and your medical doctors? For that matter, why aren't your chiropractors and your naturopaths and your acupuncturists telling you to fast? It's not just allopathy. They at least have an excuse. The people that teach the medical doctors were bought off years ago by pharmaceutical, and those poor young doctors don't even get the education. And then because they don't see anybody fast, they figure it's a lot of bunko. But holistic medicine? Why isn't the holistic practitioners telling you to fast? Well, this is why you have to use your common sense. Because you have to navigate you. You have to be informed. Let's not point fingers. Everybody's under pressures. medical doctors, as nutritionists, the public. It's a crazy world. And there's not enough animals to watch anymore. Certainly not your indoor cats after you castrate them. Then you declaw them so they don't rip up the furniture. What are we doing? Take an animal, put it in captivity, feed it nothing but dog food and cat food and Purina and Alpo, then cut its claws off and castrate it, and then observe it to see how it handles the healing. So really, we're innocent. We're all innocent. This is Christmas, so we're not pointing fingers. But use your common sense. And so the other side of that is detox gradually. As you break down your tissues through fasting, as you enhance autophagy, all those poisons, the garbage, is going to clog up your lymph. It's going to clog up your biliary system. It's going to clog up your kidneys. You may go through a couple of rough moments. And what about your emotions? Oh boy, watching people get healthy to the point where they start dealing with their emotions. All those things in your relationship with your loved ones that you've put up with, that you don't want to put up with anymore. Your relatives, your family, your friends, your church. Everybody's getting the ticket now. Everybody's on notice. You don't want to go there. It hurts too much. Well, it does hurt. But what hurts more is you're 50 and you don't have any more dreams. Your dreams haven't come true. That really hurts. So sometimes in life, in war, you got to take the best choice. The least of the two evils. What's more evil? To die never having your dreams come true? Or to go through some temporary insanity as you fast and allow your body's inherent healing mechanisms to take you to the next level? So just go gradually, nice and slowly. And keep, and this is the point, keep your detox organs open. So, as you're doing this, as you're feeling your headaches and your mood swings and this and that, as you're going slow, just like I said, step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, step six, step seven, step eight. As you're going through this step to step to step to step, keep the exit portals open. Don't go out and party with your friends while you're fasting. Don't put yourself in extremely stressful environments. But if you have to, well, you have to. It's just going to be tougher. Infrared saunas, dry saunas, dry brushing the skin, coffee enemas, getting your sleep, colon cleanses. These are the sorts of things, the portals of exit. Putting your feet in the earth, doing a little more gardening, getting some massage, using those wonderful magma clays from Premier Research Labs, those black clays, putting them on, rubbing them into the hands, rubbing them into the feet, rubbing them into the kidneys to enhance flow, stretching gently, not being physically active, but not being sedentary. Move the lymph. Take a walk. No. You don't need 16,000 herbs while you're doing this. You could spruce it up. You could make it the Cadillac of fasting. You could add some of those herbs under supervision, of course. You're the public. But you could do it bare bottom, grassroots, very basic. And you can change your life. Hate to ruin the next week for you. Not really. Party hard this week. Get it out of your system. I mean, when in Rome. But first of the year, how about a New Year's resolution for a little more health? There's one thing, one way, one low-cost attempt that you could make. It's what I'm telling you to do on this show today. And it's so low-cost. And it's so documented. And it's so easy to do if you go slowly. Just don't let your head get in the way. And what do you do it for? Do you do it for your disease? Do you do it for your cancer? Do you do it for your heart disease? Do you do it for all these things? No. You know what you do it for? You do it for your health. This is a health show. No one that heals, everyone that heals, thinks about God and health. Because the two are the same. That's how you make that Sunday stuff in church functional. That's how you take it to work. Now, you can adorn it any way you want. But one great way to do it, one great way to live benevolently, is to feel good in your body. One great way to make your dreams come true. One great way to armor yourself with what it takes to deal in a devilish world, and we all meet those devils, is to feel good. And it doesn't cost so much money to feel good. In fact, what I'm suggesting doesn't cost a lot at all. It's probably the cheapest and yet most effective thing you can do. And it's been done for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And it's scientific. Get into those articles. Don't worry about the science. How many of you that listen to this show read those articles? Just read those articles and trust in God. Isn't that what Christmas is about? 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Call. Make the appointment if it's still too confusing for you. If not, get to the archives. God bless you. Happy New Year. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Ta-ta.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.